How close is this to becoming a regional conflict that could draw in U.S. troops?
We have absolutely no intention, nor do we have any plans to send combat troops into Israel or Gaza, period.
Good. I'm going to hold you to it, Madam Vice President. Hope you don't mind.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California on KFOI up in Red Bluff and Redding, and KKRN up in Round Mountain. In Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Hope you folks are getting ready to vote next week in Ohio. In Palinville, New York on WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another all-too-thrilling edition of The Bradcast. I spent much of the weekend down, actually, down and out, after getting my both my flu shot and COVID vaccine, the first time in about a year. As the holidays are approaching, and as I would also like to recommend that all of you also get the newly updated COVID shot, which now helps protect against an expanded list of strains, so we can all be as healthy as possible over the next few months. We are, after all, going to need all hands on deck next year in another critical presidential election year. We've also got some critical elections coming up next week here in the U.S., which I hope to discuss a bit today and throughout our shows for the rest of the week, for sure. But staying healthy is critical. Please get your new shot if you haven't already done so recently. I also hope to be talking a bit more about disinformation this week on the show, which comes to mind whenever I discuss COVID vaccines, given the massive amount of disinformation purposely being circulated about those vaccines, even now out there. When you hear that disinformation, these purposeful lies about purported dangers of the vaccine, or even misinformation, just incorrect information that's being passed along unknowingly, I guess, sometimes over, yes, your public airwaves, please not only ignore it, but help push back against it by letting folks know the truth. When you hear folks, for example, falsely citing, oh, CDC's own database, reporting hundreds of thousands or even millions of deaths after people have had their COVID shot. Well, to cut to the chase, those are lies. When you hear reference to the CDC's so-called VAERS database, V-A-E-R-S, as reporting millions of injuries and incidents after people have gotten their jab, well, please know that people are either lying about that database or they do not understand the CDC's reporting system, which allows anyone, yes, including you and me, to go in and report some injury, whether it actually happened or not, following a COVID shot. It is not actually vetted by the CDC. even though people like to say, oh, the CDC's own data shows blah, blah, blah. Anti-vaxxers love to, you know, leave off that part that anyone can enter any information they want into this database when they are disinforming the public. But hopefully you know better by now. And if you didn't, well, you do now. So please be on the right side of this critical issue that has helped to keep millions alive here in the U.S. and billions around the world who have taken the shots and hugely reduced their chances of being killed by the virus or being severely sickened by it, sometimes for a very long time, since these important and effective vaccines have been available to the public. As noted, I spent much of the weekend largely down after receiving both the COVID and flu vaccines on the same day, and I tend to have about 24 hours where I'm just kind of knocked out afterwards in recovery. Desi Doyen, however, maddeningly, seems to have a much easier time with it than I do.
Yeah, for some reason it barely affects me. I get a little tired about, I don't know, 12 hours later, and then I take a nap, and then I'm fine. So yeah, it's not a problem for me, and I'm glad of it, but I would get it anyway, even if it did give me any kind of reaction, because I have very elderly parents who I wish to protect, and also some immune-compromised folks in my family who I also wish very deeply to protect.
You don't want to kill them over Thanksgiving?
I do not.
Very thoughtful of you.
I thought so too.
But I still hate you, because you're just fine the next day after it, and I'm a wreck. Anyway, that's Desi Doyen, our producer. In any case, a lot happened over the weekend and into today that I want to try to get us all caught up on as much as I can. But as I haven't been able to open the phones lately, I also want to try to do that today. If you would like to get in with your thoughts on anything I'm talking about today or will be talking about today or anything you think I should be talking about today or that I might have missed while I was down, I'd love to hear from you at 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK if you are in our live listening area today here in Southern California, or listening live anywhere over the kpfk.org web stream. You will need to hit number one to join us on air, as we are still in emergency fund drive out here at my flagship station in LA, where I will welcome you also to call that same number and hit button number two if you're able to make a donation to Pacifica's KPFK to help us stay on your public airwaves. But first, updating some stories we've been closely following on this program. The death toll from last week's Category 5 Hurricane Otis, which stunned scientists and the residents of Acapulco when it spun up from tropical storm to the top of the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale to a Category 5 in less than 12 hours last week as it slammed into the resort city and its more than 1 million residents. That death toll is now either at 48 dead or 45 dead. Getting conflicting information before airtime, with either 36 still missing or 47 still missing as recovery from the catastrophic storm continues today. Either way, not good numbers. That 48 number came from Mexican authorities on Sunday, who said the death toll continued to climb even as families began to bury loved ones. The governor of the state of Guerrero had earlier raised the number of missing to 36 from 10 a day earlier. The death toll increased after authorities had raised it to 39 on Saturday. So a lot of still confusing information. Point being here, the death toll is still rising from that storm, even as much of the world's attention has turned elsewhere. Otis roared ashore early Wednesday last week with devastating 165-mile-per-hour winds after strengthening so rapidly that people had little time to prepare. Military personnel and volunteers worked along Acapulco's main tourist strip on Saturday and announced Sunday that the boulevard had been cleared of debris. The National Electric Company reported restoring power to just 58% of homes and businesses in Acapulco, and 21 water tankers were distributing water to outlying neighborhoods. But on the city's periphery, neighborhoods even now, remain in ruin, and aid has been slow to arrive. The storm's destruction cut off the city of nearly 1 million people for the first day, and because Otis had intensified so quickly, on Tuesday, little to nothing had been staged in advance, which is just another new concern in our climate-changed era, where rapid and, in Otis's case, explosive intensification of these storms is becoming an all-new concern. And so we've seen so many of them this year do exactly that, this rapid intensification in the exceptionally warm waters off of both the Atlantic and Pacific coasts. The military presence Acapulco swelled to about 15,000 in the area. President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador had called on the armed forces to set up checkpoints in the city, now to deter looting and robbery, which has become somewhat rampant as the residents become desperate for food and supplies in the storm's aftermath that they were unable to prepare for. The federal agency, Federal Civil Defense Agency, tallied 220,000 homes that were damaged by the storm. In the Middle East, in the days since Hamas militants stormed into Israel on October 7, killing more than 1,000 Israelis, most of them were civilians, and taking more than 200 hostages. Since then, a flood of videos and photos purporting to show the conflict have filled social media, making it difficult for people around the world to sort fact from fiction. While plenty of real imagery and accounts of the ensuing carnage now in Gaza have emerged, they've been intermingled with users pushing false claims and misrepresenting videos from other events entirely. So please be careful about what you see on social media. And, you know, when you like it, make sure it's real before you pass it around to friends and family, etc. Among the fabrications that users have shared false claims about include a top Israeli commander having been kidnapped. They've circulated a false video imitating a BBC News report. They've pushed old and unrelated clips of both Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un with inaccurate English captions. By way of just a few examples, and there are now a flood of these. There is a claim, for example, that videos taken one day apart show a Palestinian so-called crisis actor pretending to be seriously injured in a hospital one day and completely fine the next. In fact, two different people appear in the videos. In addition, the video of the injured man in a hospital bed dates to August, prior to the Hamas attack on Israel. The videos are being shared to falsely claim an injured man is simply an actor playing a Palestinian victim. Another video claims to show a large number of U.S. Marines arriving at an airport in Israel amid the latest Israel-Hamas war. In fact, that video is from 2022, and it shows soldiers from the U.S.'s army arriving in Romania in 22. The original is actually easy to find on the Defense Department's website with the caption, 101st Airborne Division soldiers arrive in Romania June 28, 2022. The unit was there, quote, to reinforce NATO's eastern flank and conduct multinational exercises with allies across Europe amid Russia's imperialistic invasion of Ukraine. On 60 Minutes on Sunday, Vice President Kamala Harris said the U.S. has no intention of sending combat troops into Israel or Gaza.
How close is this to becoming a regional conflict that could draw in U.S. troops?
We have absolutely no intention, nor do we have any plans to send combat troops into Israel or Gaza, period.
Vice President Harris told us the U.S. is not telling Israel what to do, but is providing advice, equipment, and diplomatic support.
A terrorist organization, Hamas, slaughtered hundreds of young people at a concert. By most estimates, at least 1,400 Israelis are dead. Israel, without any question, has a right to defend itself. That being said, it is very important that there be no conflation between Hamas and the Palestinians. The Palestinians deserve equal measures of safety and security, self-determination and dignity. And we have been very clear that the rules of war must be adhered to and that there be humanitarian aid that flows.
That was Vice President Kamala Harris on 60 Minutes on Sunday. Another misleading video, actually just a disinformative video, shows North Korean leader Kim Jong-un saying in a speech that he blames President Joe Biden for the latest Israel-Hamas war. That video is actually from Kim celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Korean Workers' Party back in 2020. And the version currently circulating online features incorrect English captions. He doesn't actually reference the conflict in the Middle East or Joe Biden at all at any point in that video. There's also a statement circulating that purports to be from the Israeli military confirming that it bombed a hospital in a Baptist hospital in Gaza. In fact, no such post exists on the military's actual social media pages, and its top Arabic-speaking spokesperson confirmed his office has issued no such statement. Another video shows a BBC News report confirming Ukraine provided weapons to Hamas. But the widely shared video clip is fabricated, as an investigative news website that is cited in the video as the source has confirmed. Another video shows Hamas fighters parachuting onto a sports field before attacking Israeli citizens during the group's surprise October 7 attack on Israel. But in fact, while Hamas did employ paragliders to get some fighters across the border between Gaza and southern Israel, the footage of this sports field actually shows parachute jumpers in Cairo and has been online since at least September. That video and the others have been seen on Elon Musk's Twitter, now renamed X. And on TikTok, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of times. But they are false and purposely so. Please be very careful where you receive your information from right now. There are a lot of folks out there hoping to play you for fools. There is enough disturbing news from real news sources to go around, I assure you. To that end, nearly three dozen trucks entered Gaza on Sunday in the largest aid convoy since the war between Israel and Hamas began. That's good, but humanitarian workers said the assistance still falls desperately short of needs in the besieged enclave. The Gaza Health Ministry said the death toll among Palestinians has passed 8,000. Mostly women and minors, according to the Hamas-run agency. And Israeli tanks and infantry pursued what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called a second stage in the war, that has ignited over the weekend, and it was begun by Hamas's brutal October 7 incursion, according to Netanyahu. The toll, meanwhile, the death toll on both sides is without precedent in decades of Israeli-Palestinian violence. Over 1,400 people have reportedly died on the Israeli side. Israel has allowed only a trickle of aid to enter into Gaza. On Sunday, however, 33 trucks carrying water, food, medicine entered the only border crossing from Egypt. A spokesperson at the Rafah crossing told the AP. After visiting the Rafah crossing, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court called the suffering of civilians, quote, profound, and said he had not been able to enter Gaza himself. He called on Israel to respect international law, but stopped short of accusing it of war crimes. He called Hamas's October 7 attack a serious violation of international humanitarian law. The Israeli military said on Sunday that ground operations were intensifying and reiterated calls for Gaza residents to move south, saying they'd have better access to food, water, and medicine there near the Rafah crossing. But hundreds of thousands remain in the north, in part because Israel has also bombarded targets in so-called safe zones. More than 1.4 million people in Gaza have fled their homes. Palestinian militants have continued firing rockets into Israel at the same time, including towards its commercial hub of Tel Aviv. President Joe Biden, in a call with Netanyahu on Sunday, quote, underscored the need to immediately and significantly increase the flow of humanitarian assistance to meet the need of civilians in Gaza, the U.S. said. Israeli authorities said they would soon allow more humanitarian aid to enter Gaza, but they provided no details on how much aid that would be available and when. Meanwhile, crowded hospitals in Gaza came under growing threat. Residents living near Shifa Hospital, that's the territory's largest, said Israeli airstrikes overnight hit near the complex where tens of thousands of civilians are sheltering. Israel accuses Hamas of having a secret command post beneath the hospital, but it has not provided much evidence, according to AP, and Hamas denies the allegations entirely. The Palestinian Red Crescent Rescue Service said nearby Israeli airstrikes damaged parts of another Gaza City hospital after it received two calls from Israeli authorities on Sunday ordering it to evacuate. But, of course, to where? Israel ordered the hospital to evacuate more than a week ago, but it and other medical facilities have refused to do so, saying evacuation would mean death for patients on ventilators. Under no circumstances, hospitals should be bombed, said the director general of the International Committee of the Red Cross on CBS Face the Nation on Sunday. The military escalation has increased domestic pressure against Israel's government to secure the release of 239 hostages seized by Hamas during the October 7 attack. Hamas says it is ready to release all hostages if Israel releases thousands of Palestinians held in its prisons. Desperate family members, however, family members of the Israeli captives met with Netanyahu on Saturday and expressed support for an exchange, but Israel has dismissed the Hamas offer entirely as of now. The violence has inflicted serious damage on Gaza's civilian infrastructure. Hospitals are struggling to keep emergency generators running to operate incubators and other life-saving equipment, and the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees is trying to keep water pumps and bakeries up and running. Roughly 250,000 Israelis have themselves been evacuated from their homes because of violence along the border with Gaza and the northern border with Lebanon, according to the Israeli military. Communications were restored to most of Gaza's 2.3 million people on Sunday. That is good news. But it came after an Israeli bombardment described by residents as the most intense of the war. It knocked out phone and internet services late on Friday. 2 days afterwards, the cell and internet service, after it had abruptly vanished for most of Gaza, it finally came back online in the crowded enclave. For many Palestinians in Gaza, after weeks of Israel's siege, social media had been a lifeline for many, desperate to get news and to share their terrifying plight with the world. Local journalists were unable to update, to make daily postings. News organizations lost touch with their contacts and journalists inside of Gaza. Health authorities in Gaza and UN agencies warn that the blackout exacerbated Gaza's humanitarian crisis, which was already terrible. Gaza's health ministry said the communication outage had paralyzed an overwhelmed health system. International aid organizations, whose limited operations inside the enclave have teetered on collapse, said they could not reach their own staff nearly 24 hours after the blackout. Doctors Without Borders said the group had not communicated with its team and were unable, quote, to send our team to different facilities because we have no way to coordinate them. That, according to its regional coordinator, who described the situation during that communications outage as, quote, critical. When internet and phone service to Gaza was cut off over the weekend, U.S. pressure reportedly got it turned back on, according to David Dayan at the American Prospect today. He added that the U.S. has also been critical to accelerating the delivery of humanitarian aid trucks. President Biden told Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu over the weekend that the offensive must, quote, prioritize the protection of civilians. Previously, the U.S. counseled Israel to conduct a surgical operation that would minimize civilian casualties. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Dayan notes, has made oblique references to conversations aimed at restraint. Sadly, there does not appear to have been nearly enough of that restraint, though I gotta say, one wonders what this all might have looked like had the U.S. not remained at the table with Israel as an advisor, as a sometimes hourly counsel to Netanyahu, or, and I think this should make all of us shudder, well, to think about what things might have looked like right now had Donald Trump, as opposed to Joe Biden, been in office following the October 7 attacks. Now, I know we had some folks who rang in last week who wanted to talk about Israel and Gaza. I wasn't able to get to the phones. There was just too much. I will try to do that today for sure on this matter or anything else you'd like to call in and discuss at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I will ask, as I have in the past, for folks to try to be respectful, to try to help us inform here rather than inflame here. As difficult as I understand that may be in these particular circumstances. So much brighter news back home before we get to a quick break and back to your calls. The United Auto Workers strike is now set to end as the union and General Motors announced a tentative agreement on Monday on a new contract, according to several sources. The breakthrough comes just after the union had announced it had made a deal with Stellantis on Saturday, akin to the one made days earlier with Ford. And just hours after the UAW had announced a broadly expanded strike at additional GM facilities, that seems to have done the trick to bring GM on board with a new agreement with the union. The pacts must still be approved by local UAW leaders and ratified by a majority of each automaker's union-represented workers. That process will take up to several days, but already the union workers are heading back to work. If members approve the contracts, they'll last 4.5 years. Union members will get, among other things, a pay bump of 25% over the course of the deal, along with the restoration of cost of living adjustments that the unions had given up voluntarily back in the wake of the 2008 Great Recession. UAW President Sean Fain called the deal between the union and Stellantis on Saturday, quote, a turning point in the class war that has been raging in this country for the past 40 years.
This contract is about more than just economic gains for auto workers. It's a turning point in the class war that's been raging in this country for the past 40 years. For too long, it's been one-sided, and working-class people have been left behind. That's why this contract is more than just a contract. It's a call to action to workers everywhere to organize and fight for a better life. The auto workers at Ford just won a major battle in the fight for a better world. Billionaires aren't going to save the American dream. Working-class people are saving the American dream. The UAW is saving the American dream, and we are doing it together. Thank you and good night.
That was UAW President Sean Fain. He added that the deals they've made with the automakers will keep auto workers from having to choose between, quote, good jobs and green jobs as the industry converts to electric vehicles. Workers, for example, at Ford's electronic vehicle and battery plants will fall under the UAW's agreements once their workforce becomes majority union. The union said the Stellantis deal saved jobs in Belvidere, Illinois, Trenton, Michigan, Toledo, Ohio. About 1,200 workers will be hired back at the Belvidere plant, plus another 1,000 workers will be added for a new electric vehicle battery plant, according to the union. The workforce will double at the Toledo, Ohio plant. The union has said that they won $19 billion worth of investment across the U.S. Fain said Stellantis had proposed cutting 5,000 U.S. jobs, but the union strike changed that to adding 5,000 jobs by the end of the contract. Starting wages for new hires will rise 67%, including cost of living adjustments to over $30 per hour, they said in a statement. Temporary workers will get raises of more than 165%, while workers at parts centers will get an immediate 76% increase if the contract is ratified. The GM and Ford agreements are said to be similar. Very good news for union labor and collective bargaining for a lot of workers in a lot of states across the country. President Biden lauded the Big Three and its union workers following the news about the agreement with GM earlier on Monday at the White House.
These record agreements reward auto workers who gave up much to keep the industry working and going during the financial crisis more than a decade ago. These agreements ensure the iconic Big Three can still lead the world in quality and innovation. Due to the commitment and solidarity of the UAW workers, willing to exercise their right to collectively bargain, they won a record contract with over a 30% increase in wages, greater retirement security, and more paid leave. And the commitment by the Big Three to create more full-time middle-class jobs and invest tens of billions more dollars in plants and factories building automobiles' future here in America.
President Biden at the White House on Monday. Other union leaders in other industries across the U.S. who have followed similarly aggressive bargaining strategies in recent months, well, those have paid off. They have also secured pay hikes and other benefits for their members. Good news all around for those who are finally standing up, using collective bargaining to stand up against these corporations, which have been making record profits for years, even as they've been laying off workers, even as those workers have increased productivity but had a lot less to show for it. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. I've got some other news that I'd love to get to today, but I will sideline most, if not all of it, if you would like to ring in at 818-985-5735, including Mike Pence dropping out of the Republican primary for president and not making a dent in the contours of that race in the bargain, which the twice impeached, four-time indicted Donald Trump still leads considerably, according to new polling. There's also a new guy by the name of Dean Phillips, Congressman Dean Phillips, a Democratic member of Congress from Minnesota, who has announced that he is going to be running in the primary, the Democratic primary, against Joe Biden. I got a few news items regarding next Tuesday's off-year elections in places like Ohio and Virginia and more, but I'd love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. Let's take a quick break. Find out what you would like to talk about, including any of those things or anything else as well. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Wow. Dramatical. Welcome back to the Bradcast. It's Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. 818-985-5735. Whatever you would like to talk about, I would love to hear from you. Let me go straight to the phone. Like I said, I got more news that I can get to, but you are welcome to sideline me all you like. Let's go to, Marwan in Orange County. Hey, Marwan, I saw that you called in last week that you wanted to talk about Israel, Hamas, etc. We weren't able to get to you. I'm sorry we couldn't do that last week. I thank you for calling us back this week, sir.
Thank you, Brad. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. And so folks know, you are of Palestinian descent. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. Okay. That's correct.
All right.
So I want to appreciate everything you do, and I really am a big supporter of KPFK for many, many years. So,
thank you, sir.
I really like the topic that you discussed last week about misinformation, disinformation, mm-hmm. and I just had a few things to discuss with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling to see if I can actually ask your guests, how can we navigate through all this misinformation, disinformation? Mm. So two things here. So
yeah.
There's social media and there's mainstream media, correct? And we all agree that we cannot trust and we should not trust social media, not all social media, because there's a lot of correct stuff on social media, correct? There is not everything bad. But
correct.
To your point,
yeah.
We should verify, we should do our due diligence to be forward-looking or before we actually, you know, agree or disagree or whatever. So I totally agree with you.
Well, and it's hard to do, obviously, in a situation like this. It's very hard to do due diligence. So I would just say, you know, be careful. Look around. Right. There's often, as some of those stories I ran through at the previous segment, there is often, as when you see something striking and just looks horrible, there's often information out there, fact checks available from AP or factcheck.org that say, no, that is not what it purports to be. It is something else entirely. So if you see something that's too extraordinary to believe, it probably because it is.
Correct. And I totally agree. And for the average person, you're right, maybe that's not so clear. But to your point, we just have to be careful, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My question here, what about the mainstream media?
Mm-hmm.
And mainstream media, I kind of really, the past 3 weeks watching this whole story unfolded since October 7, which is, you know, I condemn all violence.
Mm-hmm.
But the mainstream media has not done a good job. This is my opinion, and has gone beyond being biased and being reporting one side. It's becoming more unprofessional. It's becoming more. They're not doing their due diligence, or they're not doing, and they're professional. Those are journalists. They get paid for what they do,
mm-hmm.
and they're not doing their due diligence. They're reporting without verifying the facts, without actually seeing things, or maybe just as you said, going to the right sources to verify all this. So the mainstream media is, in my point, it's worse than social media.
Mm.
And mainstream media, to me, it's just presenting one side of the. I'm just saying there's a lot of pictures and videos on social media, and they're being verified truthful because you cannot make up that thing. This is not a movie. Their kids, babies are dead. Under the rubble, being pulled mm-hmm. out, and none of that make it to the mainstream media. So
well,
my question here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. My question here. So how? And I agree. If we can't trust the social media, why should we trust the mainstream media?
I don't think you should trust anyone. I'm skeptical of all media sources. That said, you heard I spent quite a bit of time in the first block there talking about what's going on in Israel and Hamas. Do you feel that I was accurate?
I think you did. You know, Brad, I respect, again, I think I respect what you do, and I think, you know, you try to cover every. I couldn't hear everything else, but I think you did.
Well,
coverage on both ends. That's why we love KBS.
Well, listen, right? And listen, Marwin, the reason I ask is not because I'm fishing for compliments, but because the information that I presented was, in fact, pulled from mainstream sources, mainstream news sources. There is a lot of good reporting in the mainstream news. Now, I've been as critical of mainstream outlets as anyone over the years. I'm happy to call them out when they screw it up. They certainly screwed it up. Following 9/11 and leading us into the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, they were terrible. I find them to be a lot better now. And even now, they make mistakes and we call them out when they make mistakes. But that is on an order of magnitude different than the purposeful disinformation that we're seeing circulated on social media and, frankly, being highlighted by the algorithms on sites like Elon Musk's Twitter, now called X. And I find that incredibly dangerous because people, they don't go and read the Associated Press. They don't look at the nightly news anymore. They go on their phones and they look at TikTok and they look at Twitter. And the information that is presented to them is often just out and out, not only wrong, but purposefully so, meant to lie to them, meant to confuse them. And guys like Elon Musk are out there getting rid of the safety nets and the trust and safety parts of Twitter that used to try at least to do away with that information, that disinformation. Now that information is being highlighted to people, and a lot of folks are just seeing inaccurate information.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Can you not hear me, Marwan?
Hello?
Marwan, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I lost you for a second. Yes, I can hear you.
That's a shame because I said some really good stuff, Marwin. But
I heard most of the, everything.
Okay.
One thing I want to just say, since I have, I remember 9/11. Okay.
Yeah.
Like yesterday. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what led us to 9/11 was the, and if you remember, the war, the weapon of mass destruction, correct? A mass destruction that
lies about them. Yes.
About it.
Yes.
And eventually they found nothing, and it was all based on lies. And we all know the fact that there was nothing there. And we went to war and we killed 1 million people in Iraq, correct?
Yeah.
So to me right now, it feels 9/11 all over again, correct? There is a weapon of mass destruction. And that the media, and I disagree with, this is my personal opinion, I think the media are doing a very good job of leading us to another disaster, just like after 9/11. They're doing a very, very poor job.
Mm.
And it's not me. Just today, I was watching the news. A Muslim lady, she's just talking on the phone in a park, and she was stabbed 4 times by a lunatic. We don't know. They haven't confirmed what was the motive yet. But she was stabbed 4 times, and then he went and checked her pulse just to make sure she's dead. And then she was still maybe breathing, and he stabbed her again another 4 times. And this is, there's witnesses.
But what's the point of that, Marwan? And as I said, let's inform, not inflame. We don't know what that means, Brad, or what the reason was for that.
I'm going to get to my point, and that's the whole point.
Okay.
My point is, everybody's calling for ceasefire, correct?
Not everybody.
10,000 kids. I'm sorry?
Not everybody calling for a ceasefire, but many people.
I mean, to the peace-loving people who want to have, a better future or a better future for everyone, not just one side.
Okay.
They want to have equality for everyone. They're calling for ceasefire, correct?
Okay.
And then let the United Nations, let somebody else, a third party, to investigate all those war crimes.
Yeah, they are. They are doing that.
They're not. Israel is not letting any investigators or any United Nations representative to come in. The 20 trucks that you mentioned about the aid that coming into Gaza, you know what was on those trucks? They were useless stuff. There were COVID test kits that they're dying under the rubble. Why would we need a COVID test kit?
Okay, I don't have time to go into the weeds on this, Marwin. I take your point, and they are investigating this for war crimes. Whether they can do it properly without being allowed in is unclear. There are UN sources. Hang on, Marwan. There are UN sources inside of Gaza.
On the ground?
Yes. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, many of them have been killed. So, whether there will...
How are you going to investigate if they're already dead?
Right. Well, whether there will be the proper investigation, it seems like there rarely is in wars like this. We all talk about war crimes, and they are almost never actually brought. But, we have to keep hoping, and we have to keep informing people about what's going on there. And but I hear you. I take all of your points. I take them well, Marwin, and it's always good to hear from you, my friend. I want to get to a few more people before the hour's up.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be on the show again. I support KPFK, and I love you guys. Bye.
Always good to hear from you, sir. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Bruce in L.A. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah. I've been reading the journalist Steve Call, his book about the Bin Laden family, recently. And, of course, much of the book is about Osama bin Laden. And I just wanted to remind whoever is listening that one of the great inspirations, if you could call it inspirations, motivations for Osama bin Laden to engage in the actions he did leading up to the attacks on September 11, 2001, was the 1982 invasion of Lebanon by Israel, which he, referenced in Osama bin Laden referenced in some of his writings.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that the United States was supporting Israel's invasion of Lebanon. He watched on television buildings collapsing, so I wonder who in the Muslim world who shares Osama bin Laden's ideology, which is that itself has a long history to it, is watching the events in Gaza right now.
I hear you, Bruce, and this is one of my big concerns is, and I don't even think you need to reference Osama bin Laden here to make this point, which is that there's a lot of people looking at what is going on and whether they are being misinformed, disinformed, or hearing, the actual information about what is actually going on, who are going to be disturbed, angry for generations about what is going on right now in Gaza. And I hate to say that because I will note I'm a supporter of Israel. I think Israel ought to be able to survive. And yet I am greatly troubled by the way they are not retaliating against the offense, but bringing revenge in a way that I think is going to hurt Israel down the road. So I'm against what they are doing the way they are doing it now, because I think it's going to hurt them. Either way, I think there's a lot of us, who agree this is likely to come back to bounce back against Israel in the future, depending on how they move forward. That's why I have been happy to see how the Biden administration has been trying to get them to instead be surgical in their response and to not cut off humanitarian aid as Israel have. And so I think I'm glad they're speaking up. I wish they were able to do more, but I want to encourage them to do more, because otherwise I think this could be a hell of a lot worse. I think it's pretty bad as is. Thanks, Bruce. I appreciate the call. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Brad. CBS, Human Rights Watch, and UN aid organizations are reporting that 3,000 Palestinian children have been killed so far. In my mind, that is a war crime, and I want to ask you your opinion on that issue, and I will hang up now and take my answer on the radio. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. Well, is it a war crime to kill 3,000 children? I'm not a war crimes expert, but it don't sound good, does it? That said, you know, the way war crimes work are very strange. There is, for example, you can't collectively punish a community. So if those 3,000 children died simply because of, you know, Israel bombing willy-nilly, not targeting actual military targets, and they're just collectively punishing everybody who lives in Gaza, yeah, that's a war crime. Absolutely. If those children, some of them, were in places where there were military posts, and Hamas, as has been reported, you know, sets up their military posts where they know there will be children used as human shields, well, then it becomes a little cloudier. Now, not to me. If I was running Israel, I would still find another way to go in rather than say, well, if we kill some children, so be it. They should know better than to hide their rocket launchers there. But I think that answers your question. Yeah, I'm very concerned about war crimes. There are also, by the way, war crimes that Hamas committed when they killed some 1,400 Israeli civilians, and they targeted civilians. And yes, that is a war crime, whether they're children or adults. 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to Freddie in L.A. We've got just another few minutes here. 818-985-KPFK. We'll get in as many as we can. Freddie from L.A., welcome to the broadcast.
How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I think it's we have to remember that this conflict started over 75 years ago. So it did not start on October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost no Hamas in the West Bank, and just this year alone, 700 people, several hundred people, Palestinian people, have been killed by Israeli settlers and the IDF. Right?
Mm-hmm.
No Hamas.
Yep.
No so-called atrocity that precipitated these attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So this is ongoing. This is every year. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing is,
well,
that,
this is, let me clarify. This is every year, largely since Netanyahu has sort of encouraged these far right settlers in the West Bank to take over Palestinian lands and with new settlements and so forth, and use the IDF, the Israeli military, essentially to protect these very extreme right wingers in the West Bank who have been doing this. Yeah.
Well, there's right now there's over 600,000 of them, and so again, this has to be seen in the larger context of over 75 years of occupation. So the war crime is an ongoing war crime against the Palestinian people.
Okay.
For again, over 75 years. People need to really do their homework and learn about this. The other thing about so-called human shields, which even if one is to believe that Hamas is doing that,
mm-hmm.
international law is very clear. That does not give an occupying army the right to kill people. No, any
okay.
army. You can't do that.
I got you.
No,
yeah. Go, very quickly, Freddie, because I'm coming up against the top of the hour.
Okay. The people that were killed when Hamas did their action back on October 7th.
Their actions?
Yeah, it was an action that killed a lot of people, okay?
Well, it was an attack, Freddie, right?
It was an attack by people who have been under attack. Gaza has been under attack for many years.
Yeah, but those kids on that kibbutz and at that music festival were not the ones attacking the Hamas.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree with
good.
That 100%.
Good.
All I'm saying is that of the number that were killed, several hundred of those were actually IDF soldiers, and everybody is forgetting that. You forgot that, and everyone is forgetting.
No, I didn't. I didn't forget that, Freddie.
Okay.
And a lot more of them were soldiers because everyone is drafted if you live in Israel. So a lot of them were reservists, but that is not what they were targeting.
No, I'm not talking. I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
I'm talking about the fact that actual IDF army bases were targeted and were engaged. Okay. Now, I don't agree with anybody killing civilians, okay? And I don't agree with someone like Biden perpetrating lies of beheading 40 babies, and then literally a couple of days later, some fanatic kills a 6-year-old Palestinian boy.
Yeah.
Okay. If Trump had said something like that, people would be losing their minds.
All right.
And it's okay.
Freddie, and I hate to cut you off here. I really do. But I am literally coming up against the back of the hour. I think you made your point. I would respond. Please do not downplay the killing of not just civilians, but the killing of military. Not cool. And, you know, even as you decry what is being done to the Palestinians, let's decry what is being done to the Israelis. Enough of the killing. There is no excuse for one or the other. And so let's not make those excuses. All right, Freddie, thank you, though, for the call. And I'm sorry, I don't have time to get. Do I have time? I don't have time, do I? Okay, I'm sorry. Roya in L.A., please call back next week if you can. My apologies to everyone else who couldn't get in, but I got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator, Wendell Handy. I could talk all day. And to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com or you can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. Follow me there. Let me know what's on your mind. I look forward to talking to you soon, hopefully tomorrow. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
To the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.